generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHNB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay, this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
All righty. Good morning, Coastside. Friday, April 24th, 2026. Time for some Coastal Windage. I'm Ruben. I'm back with Crystalline. Crystalline, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for, and Michelle Dragony of CoastsideBuzz.com for... I mean, it was without a beat, didn't miss a beat. Great show. Like I was saying before the show, I was listening to it, went by, and it seemed like it was like 20 minutes and it was over. It just sounded a lot of fun.
Yeah, if ever anybody wants to know what the 4 hours between Michelle and I looks like, it's, you know, that. We just talk and talk and talk, and there's 1,000 tabs open and 17 tangents.
Totally. I mean, that, like... When I go and occasionally Michelle and I will go and have a beer, I literally need to get a good night's sleep the night before and a nap before I meet her, because it's like, you know, you got to be on and like your brain's got to be firing and it's hard to keep up. It's hard for me to keep up. So yeah. It was fun to listen.
She's definitely one of the sharpest people on this coast side.
Absolutely. Okay. This is our last episode here in the undisclosed location.
The bunker.
Yeah, we're going back to the original Coastal Windage studio, which has been remodeled like the Sphere in Las Vegas. So it's going to be a wild, crazy thing, but it's going to be fun, and we're looking forward to that. Okay, let's get right into our topics, because we got a really big show today. One of our topics is, it's that time of year, college time, and the living is queasy. Like, it's not... It's not, as a parent of a senior, it's not the fun time that I thought it would be. It's kind of stressful and really a black box. So college seniors and their families, we'll be talking about that. If you live on the mid-coast and you're wondering who spray-painted the sidewalks with white spray paint, we've got the answer for you. We'll be talking about the county's Sidewalk Identification and Displacement Mitigation Project. Yes, that is the name of the project.
I think it's so funny that government projects always have, like, the longest names in history.
Yeah, and that would be the CSIDMP, so it doesn't even... The SISDBNPP. That didn't write. I guess that's why it wasn't an acronym like BPAC, because speaking of acronyms and BPAC, in the back half of the show, we have our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Jim Sullivan and Brandon White. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Brandon.
Morning. Great to be here.
Of the Half Moon Bay, City of Half Moon Bay Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Committee, a.k.a. BPAC. Okay, we'll be talking to you guys. Did I say grilling out loud? No. Gently discussing some topics like e-bikes and trail access and other cool stuff related to BPAC. All right, let's get into the air quality report. Crystalline, that was an amazing air quality report. Quite accurate. I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I'm just such a numbers guy that I got to have the data. So let's get into the actual data. Yours was more of a aesthetic report. This is the.
To be fair, I have no idea where you get the data from, so I couldn't even look it up if I tried.
Yeah, we like it.
But
that
I did
way.
Not try. I
secret government source is where you get these data from. No, but see, if I gave the source of the data, then people would just go to that.
Absolutely.
And
trade secrets.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. So, the scale, though, is 0 to 50 is incredible. 51 to 100 is pretty good. Over 100, we don't worry about here because we're always in the incredible range, as we are today. Today in El Granada, 20, which is actually not amazing for El Granada or the coast side, but still in the amazing range. So 20 in El Granada, 20 in Half Moon Bay, 22 in Redwood City, 13 in Santa Cruz, and 11 today in Davis, California, a wonderful bike community, right? Brandon, have you biked in Davis before?
I have.
Yeah. I mean, they got all the bike paths. They really like kind of bike-centric community.
It's a bike scene out there.
Okay.
Lots of wind.
Yeah, lots of wind, but they got good coffee there, Jim.
I mean, lots of wind. I mean, we should be used to that, right?
Here. Yeah, what are you talking about? Like, yeah. Northwest wind all day long. Yeah.
Totally, exactly. Okay, so in Davis today it's 11. All right, let's get right into it. I want to just quick follow-up, Crystalline, on last week's show. You guys were discussing the freeze on building permits and the Mid-Coast, and one of the reasons is because Cypress Ridge has 80-something units, and so they have to spread that out over a couple years, which means they're not bringing in any, not opening any new building permits. And I just want to say, just a last harangue on that project. Well, there'll be many harangues because the whole transportation access around that is still a mess. Then they've got asbestos mitigation going on. I'm glad I don't live next to that site. But I've been on a bender on this show for the last, like, couple months about the cost of living here. Specifically the cost of living on the coastside. I'm talking groceries, gas, things like that. I mentioned, you know, $13 for a 12 or a Coke, $22 for a six-pack of paper towels, and so that's Safeway. And then I went up to Rayleigh's and shopped for six guys for a weekend, beer, alcohol, meats and stuff. And it came to about $560, and for a family of three shopping here on the coast side, it's like $460 each week. So we are building affordable housing because we're being forced to by the state in semi-rural areas with no infrastructure, and asking people who need affordable housing to live in the most expensive place to live. So what, are they going to drive over the hill to go to a cheaper place over the hill at the price of gas these days? No, that doesn't make any sense, not to mention our transportation issues here. So it's just, it's really confounding and confusing, and these are pieces that are not considered. You guys mentioned it. Scott Wiener and Gavin, you know, got to build, ABAG, got to build. Where's the money for the infrastructure? Where's the planning for the infrastructure? Just saying putting 100 units or 200 units, yeah, and plumbing, roads, whatever else is needed. I mean, it's not there. So it's just really frustrating.
Which I can't remember if we talked about it last week or if this was a different conversation, because they all go together in my head, but somebody was telling me that when, it was probably Michelle, was telling me that when the county supervisors approved Cypress, they even had to, like, emotionally approve, because it's not come in front of them, but, like, a traffic light. So it's like, now the county is going to have to put in a bunch of money with Caltrans to put a traffic light in there to hopefully manage all of the, you know, traffic going onto Highway 1 right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, there's just all these roll-downhill things that happen when, you know, the state forces us to do things that don't quite make sense for the community the way they are being forced.
Yeah, and again, like, they talked about that transportation stuff and putting the light in. Steve Monowitz said, we'll do it in 2030. This project's going to be online in 2027, 2028. We'll take care of the roads and stuff. I've heard the fire marshal won't sign off because the roads aren't wide enough currently to get their trucks in there should there be a situation there. So this shoehorning and ramming stuff in where it doesn't make any sense, it gets kind of old. Well, per that, not next week, the week after, so May 8th, we're going to have Joaquin Jimenez on the show. He's running for supervisor, County District 3 supervisor. That's our district. And the week after, we have confirmed that we will have Ray Mueller on, who is the incumbent supervisor in District 3. So we'll be able to ask them questions related to this. You know, I guess this is being forced on us from Sacramento, but that's our best bet, is our county supervisor to hold the line for us, or, you know, advocate for us, which the last couple supervisors have been very good at advocating for the coast side.
Yeah, and these mandates are coming from the same state that has just taken a gazillion dollars away from the county and some of the cities with the VLF, the vehicle license fees that they've revoked, which I won't get into that. If people don't know what it is, please look it up. But at a time that we're having money taken away by the state, they are also forcing the areas to spend more money.
Okay, good times here on the coast side. Well, actually, there are some good times coming up this Wednesday, April 29th. Well, actually, this Sunday, of course, is Dream Machines, right? This is our big event on the coast side. You guys go to Dream Machines, Brandon?
Yeah. Got a hot rod.
Do you? Yeah. What do you got?
I have my original 1984 CJ7 Jeep that I rebuilt from the ground up.
Wow.
With a V8.
Wow. That sounds pretty fun. So
that's cool.
Does it actually get into the dirt?
Not anymore.
Yeah. It's a show car now.
It used to, yeah. Now okay. It's in the garage.
And Jim, you have a hot rod, or like you bring it? Are you bringing that bike that you ride? That classic.
My bicycle is my hot rod.
Okay, well, you are a hot rod. I mean, we'll get into it, but Jim is a U.S. mountain bike champion, 1989, on an unsuspended bike, completely rigid frame bike, twice, two time, 2X. Okay, this. On some of the famous teams, the Richie team, you're talking about riding with Eric Heiden and the 7-Eleven guy.
You're wearing his jersey.
I know. I'm wearing a 7-Eleven classic 7-Eleven team jersey from the 80s. Okay, if you want to call in and speak to Brandon, who is the chair of BPAC, or Jim, who's, like I said, a mountain bike national champion 2X and also a member of BPAC, give us a call, 650-477-1244. Go ahead and do it. These are nice guys. They'll talk to you. So we got Dream Machines this Sunday. It's a big fundraiser for senior Coastsiders. A really important fundraiser for them. Also a super fun event.
At Coastside Adult Day Health Center.
Yeah, see, that's I knew. Right, thank you.
And that's a big club. You know, that club has a meeting the first Thursday of every month in town.
Which who does?
The Hot Rod group that puts it on.
Well, who's the hot... What's the group that...
It's called Coastside...
We had Chad Hooker on last year before...
Well, we're still talking about Dream Machines, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Dream Machines is a fundraiser for Coastside Adult Day Health Center. The current chair of the event committee is Frank, who has Cool Harbor Nights.
There you go.
And
Cool Harbor
Nights.
Thank you.
And Chad Hooker, who has been a part of it and has led it for a very long time, is still very much a part of it.
Yep. Yep, all of that. Yep, see? There we go. Count that. I hope you were listening, listeners. So we got that on Sunday. On Wednesday, there's a big collective cultural arts introduction party going on at the Douglas House, a.k.a. the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society place, featuring three coastal arts heavyweights. Bach, you have to say it right. I always get it backwards. It's the Bach Dancing and Dynamite Society, the Coastside Community Orchestra. We had Sarah Lomax, co-founder and assistant conductor of the Coastside Community Orchestra, on our January 30th, 2026 show. So check that out. You can go to khmbradio.com and listen to that. And Beach Break Entertainment and Film Festival, friend of the show Julie Mell, has been a guest and guest host many times on this program. Those three organizations will be kind of there at this event. It's a fundraiser, so there's a... We talked about this. I get confused on these. An open bar means you have to pay? Is that right?
Open can mean multiple things. It's whether it's hosted or unhosted. Hosted means that you don't have to pay, and unhosted means you pay.
Okay, I believe then this would be unhosted, because I believe this is the fundraiser part of it, because they're going to... It's free to attend. There's light snacks. There'll be silent films with live piano and jazz accompaniment. A chance to meet and chat with fellow art supporters. Bonus, there'll be a sunset that night. Yeah, they paid extra for that. It's at the Douglas House, 311 Murata Road in Half Moon Bay. April 29th from 5 to 8 p.m. Check that out. Sounds pretty fun. The Douglas House is a pretty cool house, pretty cool venue. Check out. Okay. College time and living is queasy. Yes, I'm on speed dial here right now because we want to have the whole back end of the show to talk to these guys. With a couple important things here. It's late April. By May 1st, most college seniors have to declare what school they're going to go to. So they've already done the application process. They've received the answers as to where they got in. Some kids are waitlisted, which really sucks. But most kids have received answers, and they have to decide by May 1st. So there's a lot of thinking and teeth gnashing and stressing going on in households right now. This has not been a fun, as a parent of a college senior, this has not been a fun experience. I thought it would be. It has not generally been. Because the process is just so black box now. Prior to 2019, the criteria was relatively known and navigable. Standardized test scores, GPA, class rank, extracurricular activities, awards, application, essays. That was basically the package. And there's a lot of quantitative data points in there to work off of. But now, not. Some schools, post-COVID, some schools won't even take standardized test scores. We don't take them. Some say it's optional, and it's up to the student to decide whether their score that they got on the ACT or the SAT will help their application or not. And there's no criteria around that, like plus 1,300, you should send it in, lower than that, not. It's like, will this school, will it benefit me in my application to this school or not? That's a pretty gray area.
See, that makes sense to me because I'm a terrible test taker.
Me too.
And I, for a long time, and this would be a whole other show, but I, for a long time, was very much told by my teachers, by my schools, that I was dumb. I've had teachers tell my mom I was dumb and I was never going to amount to anything. And I refused to take the SATs because I just knew I would fail it and it would just be another thing on my record. And then I had one teacher who actually cared, and I went to independent study, and turned out that was a better mode for me. So I can totally understand why I would have, if the reason is pure, then I applaud schools for wanting to look more at the person than just some scores on a test that they might just be yucky at taking tests.
I mean, I get that, but that's why there's other things, GPA, but GPA...
Also not an indicator of the person.
That, well, okay, but are we accepting people into the university? Yes, at obviously humans are being accepted, but there has to be some kind of structure to determine, like, what kind of, you know, just saying somebody's a good person, well, like, okay, that's pretty vague. So that's why they had these, you know, quantitative metrics, GPA, not also no longer like a set thing.
Schools are supposed to teach, so stacking your deck by only accepting the best and the brightest, like, there's some kids out there that probably don't test well, don't look good on paper, live in very, you know, dire circumstances. Wouldn't it be awesome if Harvard or Yale or schools that have the more of the resources to help them? That would be amazing. So,
well, I believe that Harvard and Yale do that.
Well,
but I also feel like having watched my acknowledged, entitled, and privileged son do everything that is required. Study hard, get the grades, extracurricular stuff, 200-plus service hours, everything that's required, and then get, in probably his mind, middling returns on the 25 applications that every kid has to send out these days. It doesn't feel good because why? Why? He's got the test scores. He's got the GPA. He's got the, you know, all these things. Like, what is the reasoning here? That's my point here, is that it's not clear, like, what you need to do as a kid to get there. And I think we talked about class rank, all of these things. What it boils down to, it feels like right now, is your application essay. If that's good, you got a good shot at any school. And that's why I've been on this show complaining for years. Why do kids have to apply to, like, 30 schools now? When we did it, Brandon, when you apply, and I'm looking at you because I'm pretty annoyed looking at your resume. Like, I get annoyed when we have people on the show that are just, like, so freaking impressive. We got 2X biking champion, and then Brandon's resume is like, ouch, I'm not even allowed to look at it. It's so high above me right now. How many schools did you apply to in college for undergrad?
Just to be clear, I have dyslexia. I didn't test well. But I did get perfect grades, and that helped.
How many schools did you apply to as an undergrad?
I was recruited, so I don't know if it's really fair for me. I played lacrosse in Maryland, and that's a big deal, so you get recruited. I mean, I was recruited in seventh grade for high school. But I probably applied to five schools.
Exactly. A couple of stretch.
Not 30.
No. You'd apply a couple of stretch, a couple of, like, solids, and a couple of safeties. Well, these days, because all the criteria is no longer in place, there's no such thing as a safety school anymore, which is why these kids are applying to 25 schools. Because you just don't know. You don't know.
Respectfully, what you're describing sounds exactly like what I experienced. There wasn't a lot of... Well, I mean, we didn't really know. Was it the essay? Was it your grades? Was it... I mean, SAT did carry a lot of weight back... I'm not that old, but old enough to say the SAT did carry a lot of weight.
Yes.
And just for the record, I got, like, under 1,000, and I still turned out well. So, like, that test is not for everybody. But to your point, there needs to be some standard, but it's all black box because they all value different things, so it's sort of like a crapshoot.
Yes, exactly, which is why it's stressful and not fun. Another thing that makes it not great is because you're applying to 25, 30 schools, you can't really... You have to make the decision after you see where you get accepted. Whereas before, again, when you're 5 schools, it's like, well, maybe let's go and visit a couple of these stretch schools or one of the 2 of these schools. And, you know, you can do that before you even hear back from them. Now you kind of have to wait until you hear back because you can't go and visit 25 schools, especially if you're not going to even get in there. So there's a lot of, like, at the last minute, as I've been doing the last couple months, and we're making a rush visit over to Davis today to check that out. Just got back from a week in Florida, Utah, and Irvine to check out these schools after being accepted. So that it's just a lot of stress, and now it's decision time, May 1st. I got a lot of other things to say about college, but let's move on. The county sidewalk identification and displacement mitigation project. Can I get a daub from the daub boom over there? Thank you. Yes, that breaks me into a sweat just saying that. Okay, what's with all the white graffiti on the sidewalks? Brandon, where do you live on?
I live over in Alsace-Lorraine, but I use the bike path. I noticed that there was some stuff on the road, but that's been going on for a while, hasn't it, on the bike path?
Bike path, different thing. That's we'll get to you.
I haven't seen it on the sidewalk.
Okay, so the sidewalks in El Granada, if you walk around, there's white paint all over the sidewalk, cross-hatching and stripes and stuff. Who put it there and why? Nobody knows. Why? Who did this?
What do you mean nobody knows?
Nobody knows.
All I got to do is look in the Ring cameras and rewind.
Okay, well, I don't have one of those.
Well,
Homeowners don't know.
Okay.
Answer is County DPW, and according to County, it's because they're doing you a solid, Jack, so you should appreciate it. In 2025, the Department of Public Works identified approximately 138 miles of sidewalk with vertical displacement and or damaged sidewalks requiring removal and replacement within the unincorporated areas of San Mateo County. Okay. I mean, that's really our main... I'm glad the county's on the sidewalk situation. But why now and why this project? Well, apparently they have Measure A money burning a hole in their pocket. Here's from their FAQ from their project website. Why is the county repairing the sidewalk? Answer, although repair and maintenance responsibility is with the adjacent property owner, the county is providing a one-time repair as a temporary measure to address specific sidewalk displacements in your area. Once the temporary repair is completed, it is recommended that the property owner make permanent repairs to the sidewalk if needed and to maintain the sidewalk. Okay, 138 miles. Is that a phone call for us, Frank? Okay, we've got... I see the light for the ringer ringing, but I didn't hear it and I don't hear the person, so let me know when you got that, Frank. 138 sidewalk miles, 23 of those are on the Midcoast. 0.53 of them are in Pescadero. Yes?
Go ahead.
Okay, we've got a caller for Brandon, Jim, Chrislin, and myself. Who's on the phone?
Hey, this is Mike Kahn with Explore Local Nature.
Hey, Mike.
You're from Pacifica.
Yes, Mike. What's up?
Yeah, well, I appreciate, picking up. I have a couple of other events that are going on this weekend that, since it's Earth Month and I'm all about nature, I just needed to try and promote those. And they're totally local.
Let's have it.
Cool with that?
Yeah, let's have it.
So, Spring Fest at Quarry Park on Saturday. So, in El Granada, from 11 to 2, free event. So at the San Mateo County Parks Foundation, one of our sponsors, and San Mateo County Parks putting that on. There's lots of, you know, fully family-friendly, kid-friendly face painting performances, and there's food from Sage Bakehouse. So that's
the savory pies. We talked about savory pies.
So good.
Yeah, savory pies. Okay. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
And then on, and forgive me if I happen to miss it, but Coastal Wildflower Day Festival on Sunday. So I know there's three machines too, but hit them both if you can. This one's from 10 to 2 at Venice Beach at Half Moon Bay State Beach. $10 if you drive in, but bike in or walk in for free.
Sounds great. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate that. Hey, Mike, we got to get back to our topic here, but hey, let's get you back on the show because you've got some information about your personal project that we had you on the show about, Explore Local Nature, and how that is kind of evolving, and we'd love to have you back on the show to talk about that. What do you think?
That'd be awesome. I'd love to.
Okay, cool.
Appreciate it.
We'll reach out to you, Mike. Thank you very much for the call. And check those events out. Quarry Park on Saturday, Venice Beach on Sunday. Thanks, Mike. Okay. Back to the mitigation project. So there's two phases of this project. Phase one is identification and marking, which has already happened. They went around, they sprayed some stuff. The website says there's two kinds of markings. Okay, there's offset, which is from 0 to 2 inches of offset of the sidewalk if it's not level. They're going to identify that with a certain marking, and then 2 inches or more is repair and replacement, R&R. The funny thing is, when you go to their website, the markings are exactly the same. So unless you've got your ruler or your caliper out, who knows which one it is? Okay, so that's phase one, is the identification and marking. That's what the spray-painted lines are. Phase two is mitigation. That has supposedly already started, and we saw a guy out there on our street yesterday doing it. They got a big sander for the offset marked sidewalks, and they just come and they sand it down level. So it's just a bunch of concrete dust flying around. They sand it down level. That's done. If it's marked for R&R, they're just giving you a heads up that this sidewalk needs to be replaced. County not going to help you with that. You have to get an encroachment permit to even do that. You have to have a licensed contractor to do that, and you have to pay for it yourself. And the county's just helpfully spray painting your sidewalk to point that out to you. We've asked the county, what if you don't do it? What if you don't do it? Like, okay, the county's marked it. Does that mean you have to do it? That people are going to have to pay money for this? Answer, no. So it begs the question, will homeowners with R&R markings be forced to replace and repair the marked sidewalks at their own expense? County answer, the county cannot compel property owners to make repairs to their property. Sidewalk repairs performed by property owners would be at the property owner's expense.
That is so wild.
Well, per California Streets and Highway Code Section 5610, the responsibility for repair and maintenance of sidewalks is upon the adjacent property owner. So that's on you to repair your sidewalk. And you have to get an encroachment. You can't just do it.
Yeah.
You can't do it yourself.
It's you quote-unquote own it, but you don't actually own it.
But you're going to pay for it if you want to fix it.
And we should note, though, that if somebody does have an R&R in front of their sidewalk, in front of their house, you will probably want to check with your insurance, because at some point it becomes an ADA issue. And if an ADA individual was to trip on that unlevelness, it would fall on the homeowner to cover that medical.
Well, it would fall, if anybody tripped on it, it would fall on the homeowner.
Yeah,
you
are under
you are liable, which is kind of the, like,
yeah,
you know, okay. Are you giving me the finger here, Frank? Okay. So the answer is, so that's what the spray painting is. If you've got the R&R and that you haven't had your sidewalk sanded down, every slip and fall lawyer in the state is listening to this right now, going to be like, I'm going to walk around the Midcoast and see where those markings are. So thank you, county, for pointing it out so everybody can get sued. Okay, let's go take a break. And when we come back, we'll be back with Brandon and Jim to talk about BPAC and all their purview.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Littrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
All right, and we're back. Okay, here we go. Let's dive right into it. This is our Shooting the Breeze live interview with Jim Sullivan, Brandon White of the Half Moon Bay Bicycle Pedestrian and Advisory Committee. Okay, so Jim, we mentioned that you've been on the show before, February 11th, 2022. That show, we talked about bikes, of course, with your storied history of mountain biking. And but we, on that show, we also talked about the Planning Commission's 3-1 decision to deny a coastal development permit for the county's proposed off-leash pilot programs for dogs at Quarry Park and Pillar Point Bluffs. You were on that committee. Yep. I was on that committee with you. We worked for 6 years to get that, only to have it at the last minute denied. We were able to carve out an off-leash program at Quarry Park, but let's just say constituents did not want it to happen at Pillar Point Bluffs, and they leaned on the Planning Commission. Very disappointed in the Planning Commission's a decision on that, but that's what we talked about in that episode.
We also got Memorial Park camping, family camping that you can from Labor Day to Memorial Day bring your pets along. So make sure to check in advance because those spots fill up quick.
I'm sure. I mean, people see all this open space and think, oh, there's all this place to run your dog. No, there actually is hardly anywhere where you can have your dog and hardly anywhere you can have it off leash legally. Okay. And Brandon, so it's your first time on your show. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in the Bay Area?
I did not. I've been here 15 years, here in Half Moon Bay for 13 years. I'm originally from Maryland. My wife is from California. All background in tech, always wanted to come to Silicon Valley. And a friend said, you know, you should look at, you guys seem more like Half Moon Bay people. So I was staying with a friend in, up north, and I started riding my bike here on the weekends, and I said, oh man, this is epic. So it's perfect. We love the ocean, and we're glad to be here. It's grateful. I'm grateful every morning I wake up here.
I mean, I was mentioning, you know, my feelings of inferiority looking at my guests' resumes. Author, producer, podcast host, angel investor, fisherman, cyclist, public speaker, among other talents. You've worked as a CFO, venture capitalist, software engineer, or just managing software engineers?
Well, I used to write code back in the day with BASIC, but that was a long time ago. No, the engineers don't let me write code anymore.
Well, engineers don't get to write code anymore. Agentic AI writes the code.
I don't know. That's true, but that's another show we can get into.
That is. We should get into that. Okay. Hey, what's a radio show got to do, host got to do to get some of that angel money thrown around?
You gotta have a good
throw some around this way.
Have a good business plan.
Okay, well, never mind then. I knew there was some reason.
Are we on the radio?
Yeah, right. Did I say that out? Are we having this conversation out loud? Okay. But now you're the chair of BPAC. I mean, because you're quite an impressive cyclist yourself.
I'm not as impressive. I'm just a hobbyist, and I love biking. It gives me, it's just fun. And here on the coast, not only in Half Moon Bay, but just this coast. I mean, to be able to ride your bike down the coast, it's the most gorgeous stretch of coastline that you can ride like that probably in the world. And that's just epic. So I'm really grateful to be able to do that. And, you know, we have a lot of cyclists. And here on the coast, we have a lot of people who bike, walk. And I thought that was important. So that's how I originally got involved with BPAC.
Oh, well, thank you for doing that, both of you. Thank you for being on this council. Okay, so let's hear a little about BPAC and its mission. So it's the City of Half Moon Bay Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Council, but apparently you don't have to be a resident of Half Moon Bay to be on this committee or on this council?
I don't... I'm hesitant to like quote us on this since we're on live radio, but I believe you
never stopped me before.
Sounds like it. I like that. However, I believe that you need to be in Half Moon Bay, the city of Half Moon Bay, to be able to serve on the council. We don't, our committee, we don't have anybody else who's outside of it. You can certainly express your opinions from El Granada and those places.
Sure,
you can serve on it.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
I will note, though, wasn't Michelle Dragony on that?
Yes,
and
she
so
was,
she does not live in the city limit.
Okay, good point.
Maybe that was a special exception.
So maybe it should be the Coastside Bicycle and Pedestrian.
Well, the
advisor.
People who are appointed to it are appointed by the Half Moon Bay City Council, so that would work.
Okay.
Because then it's unincorporated. You know, it sort of gets complicated, doesn't it?
It does. It always does. Okay, well, let's get right into e-bikes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We saw that at your March 3rd meeting of BPAC, you guys considered an update to the city's municipal code on e-bikes. You know, looking at the staff report, I mean, let's back up a second, because my main statement on this, for many years, I've been talking about the slippery slope of e-bikes, and I've been waved off of, like, it's fine, it's nothing, it's just, you know, a little, like, pedal assist, it's just a little throttle assist, it's fine, it's not fine, and that's the slippery slope I'm talking about. And now the question is there anything that can actually be done? From your staff report, lines like explore strategies to discourage the use of high-powered electric motorcycles for school transportation. Okay, explore strategies. We're beyond the explore strategies part. Okay, stuff is happening that is the bikes are so powered and so heavy now, and we got little kids riding these powered bikes to school, to middle school, on city streets. And so exploring strategies, whether it's BPAC, the city council, the county, exploring strategies not going to get it done. So what came out of that discussion? That were you able to bring something to the city council to advise to them? And if so, what did they do with that?
Well, we've been on the BPAC discussing these issues for many years because it is evolving, to your point. And I think it's the e-bike scene showed up not just for Half Moon Bay and not just for California, but the entire country really fast. And I think that in anything in the world is starts to be a little bit of the Wild West. So we have these three classes of bikes, and to answer your question specifically, we were not asked to bring something to the city council at that meeting. I believe in that meeting, what the recommendation that we did make, which we've been discussing for years, was a recommendation on the speed limit on our coastal trails, and we did recommend 15 miles an hour for our portions in Half Moon Bay. I think it's important to remember that the coastal trail here in Half Moon Bay also transits parks. And parks have traditionally, and we work together, gone along with our recommendation in some cases when they can. So the speed limit is already, I believe, 15 miles an hour in those parks. Now the parks do differ in that they limit electric bikes to class one only is what they state. How that's enforced is a separate discussion. In Half Moon Bay, we have class 1, 2, and 3 are currently allowed on the coastal trails.
I mean, so I did have the interns. Here's the interns.
Sorry, can I ask that there is a definition of class 1, class 2, class 3 for those of us who do not ride bicycles?
Yeah, so I could give you the quick cliff notes. The cliff notes is class 1 is power assisted with no throttle. So, and only up to 20 miles an hour. So as you're biking, it's assisting you to go as fast as you can.
The cranks, you can feel them going.
With that. Class 2 has a throttle, has a limit of 20 miles an hour, but you do not need to pedal to engage the electric. And class 3 does not theoretically have a throttle, can go to 28 miles an hour, and is also limited by age. I think nobody under 16 in California can ride a class 3. Is that right, Jimmy?
Yeah, and with our tech-savvy area of California, all three of the top-end speed limits can be bypassed with a handheld. So it's really a tough nut.
Yeah, I mean, so speed limit... You know, the speed limit was already 15 miles an hour. I mean, that's the acknowledged speed limit on the bike trail. So, you know, this is kind of like the county when they had their big meeting last month, and out of that came that, like, you're not allowed to ride e-bikes on the sidewalk. Like, all the things that were already there, they're just now specifically putting in language about e-bikes. So that has not solved the e-bike problems that I'm pointing out, which are these bikes 20 miles an hour. I don't have the numbers, but I would say, yes, in the early years, there was the pedal assist, and that was like kind of the first kind of e-bike. But nobody's riding those kinds of bikes anymore. This is the slippery slope. People are up to the Class 3 throttle assist. I've got a picture of a, you know, this is obviously on the extreme end, but one of these e-bikes that it's classified as an e-bike as opposed to an e-moto if it has some cranks with some pedals that turn. And they're making these humongous e-bikes now with these little tiny cranks and pedals just to nominally be able to still classify them as e-bikes, and these bikes go way faster than 20 miles an hour. I got bikes riding in the shoulder on Highway 1 in the morning doing 40 miles an hour faster than me in my car driving down there. So this is what I'm talking about. It has gotten out of control. Putting a speed limit. Okay, let's just say we put the speed. Who's enforcing that speed limit?
So those are all good points. I think right now with the Wild West, what we're trying to do in Half Moon Bay is to obviously the state's going to figure out some things, and you can raise your eyebrows, but at some point we need. So here's how I think about it: is that if we regulated driving by every city and county, that would sort of be crazy, right? Oh, well, you're 16 here, you're 18 here, you can do a rolling stop here. I mean, that doesn't work. So what we need here is a unified infrastructure, or whether we agree with what comes out of Sacramento or not. I'm not commenting on that. I'm not. I'm just saying we need to have a structure to work in, and until that is sort of sorted out, all of these cities are trying to figure it out. And here on the coast, I think we have some interesting circumstances, is that if we think about kids, we don't have a robust bus system from what I can see.
We don't have, no, we do not.
I'm trying to be nice about it, right? So in order for kids to get to school, they can pedal for sure, but that's hard. I mean, there's a lot of hills around here. You can say that, but we need to get kids to school. We agree on that. We got to get kids to school.
Yep.
So an e-bike is a way to do that. Now, I happen to be more, I'm not saying is the way, I'm saying it is a way, and for some kids, it may be the only way. It's true. Could be.
Well, how did they do that 10 years ago before the e-bikes were here? They pedaled. I mean,
it's a good question, but the fact is that's over, and we're here now, and I tend to be a behavioral economics person, if you're trying to get a behavior to happen, you just design it. You can't regulate it. So if you design that these kids can't have an e-bike, and technically by law in California, they can't have an e-bike, they're under 16 unless they took a course, and they have an ID.
Exactly.
So if they don't have that, then you don't give them the parking spot at school. And now you're going to get the behavior that they get, the training and things. So, this isn't a simple thing. I think we're trying to work our way through it so that it... And then you have older people who are going to say, well, I can't pedal on the coast. And what are you going to say to them? No, you can't have an e-bike?
Yes, I've told Jim that. I've told Jim, you got an e-bike, right?
No.
No? I thought you had an e-bike.
Oh, my God. I'm going to leave because that's going to be... That's bad news.
Thank goodness.
I'm not in a hurry, and I don't go to school. I enjoy turning the cranks.
Okay. To me, a bicycle is a perfect creation. It requires no outside power source. It's self-sustaining, and it works great. And so adding a power source is not needed and has caused all these problems because humans won't stop. Add a power source, it's going to get more power, it's going to get bigger, bikes are going to get heavier, and we've got this problem. And the problem I see that this is an unsolvable problem because it's already gotten too far along. It wasn't nipped in the bud, it's gotten too far along, and the two problems are money and cult of technology. Money being that the bike industry is head over heels about this. It's like the music. They're getting everybody to refresh. They had run out of customers. They had hit the wall in growth. And now the industry is just growing, selling all of these bikes. Parents out there buying these 80-pound e-bikes that go 30-plus miles an hour. And I, in the neighborhood the other day, three, like, 8-year-olds, no helmets, flip-flops on a single e-bike, zipping around the neighborhood. Okay, they didn't buy that bike themselves. They didn't save up their, you know, tin cans and their paper delivery money for that. Those parents bought that multi-$1,000 e-bike for them and turned them loose with it. So money, the bike industry is not going to allow any regulations to be passed that limit the amount of sales of these e-bikes. Two, cult of technology. We are just mouth open, around the horn, sucking down technology without questioning it all. We're talking about power problems and everything. Why do we need to put an e-battery on a bike that works fine? 10 years ago, kids were pedaling the bikes. Now you can't hardly find a kid on a pedal bike anymore. The cult of technology, put anything with a little, you know, a chip on it, or anything that automates, and so you don't have to do anything, and America's just gaga for it. So those two things, I don't see any resolution to this, because the only two resolutions are licensing and enforcement.
First and foremost, there's absolutely no human problem that is not solvable. It just depends on whether or not the people and powers that be that need to be the ones to solve that problem do it. And secondly, random question, how do scooters fit into this? Because the other, like, are they considered e-bikes? I saw a kid on Main Street the other day that had to have been going over 20 miles an hour on a stand-up scooter. Mm-hmm. And those are also getting more motorized and powerful. So I'm just wondering if that's like a loophole.
I believe the county has come up with a new category, e-conveyance.
Oh.
So that would fall under that.
We love those fancy words.
Just another name.
But to address something, one, you can solve anything. Two is, it's not unsolvable, because here in California there's a case, I don't know exactly the name of the case going on, but there's a case where something happened with a kid and he hurt someone else, and now the parents are going to be liable. Mm-hmm. If you want parents to stop buying the 80-pound bike or whatever, then you make them liable, because then they will think twice before they do it. So you can behavioral design these things, because the truth is, to your point, and I've said it many times, our meetings are recorded, we can put 15 miles an hour, we can put 5 miles an hour. That we don't have the money to, and do we want police on a weekend to be policing the coastal trail, or do we want them driving up and down the coast catching these speeders that, I mean, if you ride your bike enough, you'll see them, you know, between the cars and the motorcycles that come out. And look, I had a motorcycle, so I'm not beating up on those people. I understand it. But we just don't have the resources. So you're going to have to design the behavior so that the behavior happens without trying to crack down on enforcement, because that's just, to your point, probably not going to work.
Well, I mean, we do have enforcement for cars. Motorcycles, you're supposed to have an M1 certification, and I would, again, don't have the data. I would guess that 80% of people riding motorcycles out there have never even heard of the M1 certification.
I don't know that that's true. I got my first motorcycle license in Maryland, and that was, I mean, you won't get the motorcycle, in theory.
Well, California,
you can buy a motorcycle.
Yeah, you can get your motorcycle.
That's a whole separate subject.
I don't know anybody. I know a lot of motorcycle riders, and every single one of them is licensed.
Licensed, but M1 certification. You have to take a specific test and a specific physical test to get the M1 certification, not just a driver's license.
No. The motorcycle license.
Okay. Well, so we do have that.
Behaviorally, you probably cannot get insurance for your motorcycle unless you have the California motorcycle license, which means that you would be driving illegally, so that behavioral design forces that.
Well, the California Vehicle Code, per your question, Chrislyn, defines a moped or motorized bicycle as a 2 or 3-wheel device with operable pedals, an automatic transmission, and a motor producing less than 4 gross brake horsepower with a top speed of 30 miles per hour. So some of these e-bikes are going well past 30 miles an hour. Operators for these specific bikes listed here, motorized bicycles, required an M1 or M2 license, a DOT-compliant helmet, and must obey traffic laws, requires a valid driver's license with an M1 or M2 endorsement, insurance not required, but is recommended, must wear a DOT-approved helmet, cannot ride trails, paths, or sidewalks unless allowed by local ordinance. Again, we got nine-year-olds riding these 80-pound bikes that go 40-plus miles an hour. Parents are not being behaviorally enhanced or guided. I'm sorry, I forgot your term, Rand. What was the term?
Behavioral design.
Not being behaviorally designed to not buy these things for their kids. And with zero enforcement and zero enforcement mechanism or funding, again, the county had pages and pages where they updated their ordinance. There wasn't one word in there about funding or enforcement, how that's going to be an increase in enforcement patrols or anything. So without those two things...
So you sound very upset.
I am upset.
You sound upset. What do you not want e-bikes on trails, or what's your idea?
I want them, they should be, I don't want kids riding them, okay? Because the kids are riding them on public roads with no training in public safety or the rules of the road.
But so they can ride a pedal bike?
Yes. Okay. Because a pedal bike doesn't have the same amount of speed, and it doesn't take the same amount of distance to stop on a 25-pound pedal bike as it does on an 80-pound e-bike going 40 miles an hour.
And what's your definition of a kid?
0 to 18.
Okay, I'm trying to get this.
0 to 18 is a kid. That's my definition.
So anyone under 18, you don't believe should ride an e-bike?
Unless they have an M1 certification.
Oh, unless they
have. And a license for that e-bike. Yes.
Class 1, 2, or 3.
Anything with a motor. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And I think New Jersey just mandated that for all the under 16 or 18. I'm not sure which. So there's it's heading in that direction in many locales.
I mean, I would back it up. I would back down to 16. You can get a driver's license. You can get an M1 certification at 15 and a half. You can get and your driver's permit. You can be riding your motorcycle around at 15 and a half with a driver's. So let's say 15 and a half.
So do they need to have a license plate and an ID as well?
That bike should be registered and have some kind of sticker on it, yes.
With the state?
Per your earlier comment, I think the state is the only body that could regulate this, just like with drivers.
So I think there's a bill right now in California, I forget the lady's name, who has put that for...
Pappas.
So that has to have a license, that you will, on class 2 and 3, you will have to have a license plate and a California ID. So that would satisfy what you're saying.
Which that falls right in line with enduros. So... For those who are unaware, an enduro is a modified dirt bike that is then street legal because they put lights on it and you put a license plate on it and it gets registered and the whole thing. But we even have to register our dirt bikes because your dirt bikes get a red sticker, green sticker, depending on the spark arrestor, blah, 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 blah.
No.
So, like, I can't even go legally to dirt bike parks if I don't register my dirt bike. So I will say that I agree with registering e-moto and e-bikes of a certain caliber.
Well, e-moto, a whole different thing. Like, that's just...
Right, but if they exist, they should be
for sure
registered and regulated.
Back to... I would even, we got a compromise, you can't get... I would concede that class 1, right, the which is just the pedal assist, that supposedly can't go more than 20 miles an hour. Okay. If we could somehow make sure that they were just class ones, those could maybe be ridden by kids and not need licensing or whatever. Because, again, part of my problem is when you have these increasingly powerful bikes, then you can have increasingly heavy bikes. And now they've got these e-bikes that are like, 8 feet long, where you can carry a big cooler and two or three people on them. And because they're powered... You know, in the old days, if you had to pedal that yourself, that's a behavioral limit right there. You're not going to have all this stuff because you can't pedal it yourself. But because there's a power now, it's all this stuff added on, plus the weight of the bike, it becomes a dangerous vehicle. If you hit somebody on the bike path with that bike going even 50, even the speed limit, you're going to hurt somebody. So I would be willing to concede class one, you could go without the license
just,
and the registration.
Just because I know that we're at the end here of the show, and I want to understand the parameters that you would be happy with. Should these bikes be allowed on the coastal trails?
Class 2 and 3, absolutely not. E-motos, again, that's just not even on the table for discussion. Right. Class 2 and 3, absolutely not. Again, one of my grumps is, as a road biker, I would ride my 16-pound road bike on the coastal trail, maybe, 15, 20 miles, and definitely 15 miles an hour, sometimes up to 20, but 20 miles an hour, even on the flat, requires a significant amount of effort, okay? And it's a 16-pound bike, and I'm an expert rider. And I would have these folks yelling at me, slow down, slow down, blah, blah, blah. And now these exact same folks, and of course are the exact same people, the exact same types of folks, are now blowing past me on their powered e-bikes, no helmet, flip-flops, da-da-da-da-da, just not a care in the world, doing 20-plus miles an hour, blowing down the bike path. So, yeah, get them off the bike path. It's not safe. If we want to complete the parallel trail on the east side of the highway, if that could ever get completed, then maybe we could have a situation of like, this is more of a commuter trail over, commuter path over here, where you could have some discussion about maybe a higher speed limit or different classes of bikes. And then you've got your more casual, family friendly, slower bike path next to the coast side.
And before we wrap up, I just want to say, just for anybody listening, in our next BPAC meeting, public can call in and comment. We will be talking about the South Corridor extension, which may or may not end up on the east or west side. We have a piece here that's on the west side. But I just wanted to plug that for our next BPAC meeting. And the city has a bunch of outreach as it relates to public comment for that South Corridor extension, because we are trying to reach down to the end of the town limits.
I mean, we currently always had Connect the Coast Side, all these transportation plans. None of it is legitimate to me until we have a bike path that runs continuously from Moon Ridge to Monterra.
Well, we are trying.
I know. I'm just saying.
There is a plan, and we are talking about the South Extension at the next BPAC meeting, and I share your frustration, but it's functionally two things in my mind, having been involved in this process, is one, money, and two is, I'm hesitating to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Do it, Brandon.
So many regulations and so much BS in this state. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be, I'm the biggest conservation guy you're going to meet. That's a fact. But to go through 10 years of studies and all this BS that just feeds the system is absolutely ridiculous. And that is why we don't have a bike path, which in theory is human powered, good for the environment, and six other things. So until we've got so many structural problems, but I think hopefully we've covered bicycle and pedestrian trails and the issue with e-bikes.
Real quick, when is your BPAC meeting?
Yeah, it's in 2 weeks. It's on a Thursday, not next Thursday, the following Thursday.
I got the answer. We petitioned the state and Gavin for a builder's remedy for bike paths. How about that? You can get a builder's remedy to build stupid ADUs all over the place and get past the building regulations.
I look forward to seeing you at the next town council meeting.
Yeah, they love me there. Okay. I believe I'm on the list, I'm not allowed in the door. If you see this person, not allowed to come in.
It's why the community center is next to the sheriff's office.
Actually, the next one is in the sheriff's office, isn't it?
We normally had them in there, yeah. And I think we're going back to there. But, you can look it up online at the city website.
Well, I'm glad there is a BPAC, and I'm glad you guys are looking into this because, right, somebody's got to do it, and I know it's a lot of red tape and, government stuff, and glad you guys are... Glad you guys are on it.
Consider taking the bus to the car show this weekend. The 117 will take you right there. It'll save your headache of the traffic.
Totally, totally. Okay, well, thank you both for being on. Really appreciate it. Great discussion about e-bikes. I can never get enough of that until the problem is solved, and we've got the two people that are going to solve this problem right here. Okay, next week. We got a lot of shows coming up. Hold on, Frank. We got a lot of stuff coming up. Next week, we have Pastor Sue Holland and Lori Weigelt from Coastside Lutheran Church. May 8th, we have Joaquin Jimenez. May 15th, Ray Mueller. May 22nd, Tom Steyer, ? I mean, he's a local landowner. We put it out there like you want to be on your local radio station talking to your neighbors if you think you want to be governor. Haven't heard back from Tom. Tom, dude. Invitations out there. Okay. And then we have, after that, three open dates till the end of this season of Coastal Winded. Thank you both for being on. Really appreciate it. And we'll have you back, I'm sure, to discuss developments on the coast side.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Until next week, thank you for listening. This has been Coastal Winded.
The talk of the coast.